needs to happen at a procedural level for this to become reality is that countries need to really stop thinking that this treaty will be adopted by consensus, that the countries like Russia and Saudi Arabia will agree to this. I don't think that they will. I don't think that they ever will. And that's why these countries that are really serious and they really want to do this, they need to move ahead, even if it means losing their participation in the process.
You're listening to Plastisphere, the podcast on plastics, people and the planet. My name is Anja Krieger. Welcome to part 3 of our recap on the negotiations towards the Global Plastics Treaty. If you're starting here and would like the full context, I recommend you go back to part 1 and 2 of this mini-series, in which we talked about the first two rounds of negotiation in Uruguay and France. These meetings are called the INCs, because the Intergovernmental Negotiating Committee gets together there. Magnus Lovold has attended all of them as an observer with NAIL, the Norwegian Academy of International Law. He blogs about treaty making and diplomacy on his blog on Medium called Points of Order. In this episode, we'll revisit the most recent meeting in Nairobi, Kenya, in the winter of 2023, and hear what happened there. So far, we learned that a small group of countries has held up the negotiations. They want full consensus so that they're able to veto any decision that they don't like. But the vast majority of countries are in favor of the option to vote. With a vote, not all countries need to agree, but a majority can make a decision. Magnus said this is important not only to solve plastic pollution, but other important environmental issues as well, like climate change and biodiversity loss. There were great hopes that this issue could finally be resolved at the third INC meeting in Kenya. That after lots of debate about the process, the delegates could finally start discussing the actual measures that would end plastic pollution. That's where we're picking up our conversation.
At the INC2 in Paris, there was one decision that came out of that was quite promising. And that was that the committee agreed to give the chair the task of developing what is called a zero draft of the Treaty on Plastic Pollution. So this was quite encouraging, I think, because this was a clear sign of progress. There's no longer just potential options, but actually a member of the committee, actually the leader of the committee, actually trying to shape all this into a treaty, like legal text, what could actually go into it. So that was quite encouraging, I think. And the chair and the chair's team, they worked on this, of course, assisted by the secretariat, in the months leading up to the third negotiation session in Nairobi. And that zero draft, in my opinion, was pretty good. First of all, it seemed to reflect really well all the suggestions that had been made by countries in the run-up to the Paris session. There was also a round of submissions from states to inform the development of the zero draft. It seemed to reflect that very well as well. And it reflected well the discussions that actually took place at long last in Paris after they had concluded the procedural fight.
So you thought the zero draft was pretty good. What happened with it then? In the winter of 2023, all the negotiators and NGO people and scientists meet in Nairobi.
You know, based on signals that we had heard, and also sort of the atmosphere in the room, there was some excitement around, okay, finally, we're going somewhere. We have a zero draft. We have some legal text. This could actually, you know, end up as a treaty. It was possible to see how this could, you know, end up as a treaty that could be adopted. It was sort of an optimistic, I think, attitude at the beginning of that. And then now there was the expectation that now countries going to sort of get down to business. They're going to look at this text. They're going to start negotiating. What is this a good way to formulate things? Maybe should we tweak it a little bit? And sort of get into the nitty-gritty of what this treaty should actually contain. I think that was the expectation. And it was a really good, you know, atmosphere there, I think, in the beginning. And sort of great hopes that this would, you know, finally lead somewhere. But, of course, the big question going into INC3 And what we really hoped would happen is that the zero draft would be indeed accepted as a basis for negotiations. That had not really been agreed. What had been agreed in Paris was that the chair would produce the zero draft, but there was no agreement that this zero draft would constitute the starting point or the basis of negotiations. So that was really the big question. And almost immediately when the plenary started, the meeting started in Nairobi, some countries, they call themselves now the like-minded group, they were starting to question this zero draft, and they were starting to question whether this could be indeed used as a basis of negotiations at all. It felt very suddenly like we'd one step forward and then two steps back, right? What they asked for and requested specifically was that whatever suggestions that they made, you know, that member states made from the floor, and whatever proposals they've made would sort of have equal value or equal status to what was in the zero draft. So, you know, in theory, a individual member country could come and present a alternative zero draft, and there would be no difference in status or importance between that one text presented by one country and the text presented by the chair, the head of the committee, based on, you know, an attempt to really try to capture the view of everybody. So that was a bit disappointing, but, you know, and I think that really set the stage for a very, very difficult session in Nairobi, because then when they started actually looking at the zero draft in earnest in what they call contact groups, which is sort of subgroups of the committee, and then countries started to insert their alternative formulations and their alternatives, it quickly became clear that this text would end up in a very, very large and very, very confusing document. And that's indeed exactly what happened. You had this zero draft in the beginning, which already covered almost everything. But then you had, you know, a lot of states, they then either, you know, came and suggested they didn't want any text at all on, you know, for instance, the regulation of primary plastic production. And then in addition, there was just so many suggestions for alternative formulations and alternative ways to do that. So as a result of that, after several days of going through the text and for countries to propose their alternative formulations, validating whether their formulations and proposals have been accurately captured in the updated document, you know, eventually, you know, this document turned into a 70 pages document, which is what indeed we have in front of us now, which is very, very difficult to navigate. So, you know, there was hope that a zero draft would be a productive starting point for negotiations. And I think, you know, after the 7-day session in Nairobi, I think when it comes to the, you know, the clarity or the sense of clarity that people have about what this treaty should actually do, that sense of clarity was much greater before INC3 in Nairobi than after. So in that sense, it was this feeling that we're going backwards, that things are getting more confusing. We made some progress between INC2 and INC3, but now we're sort of back to where we started. It was a little bit the feeling that many people got, I think. And it was, yeah, that was sort of the feeling, and it sort of turned into this this very complicated and very difficult document to navigate that we're now stuck with, in a sense.
Is that what you called the choose your own adventure document in your blog?
So in a sense, if you look at the mandate, the negotiation mandate that was adopted in 2022, if you look at the potential option paper, and even if you look at the zero draft that was prepared, although that was much clearer, and definitely now when you have the so-called revised draft text, you know, there's just so many options, and whatever you want and whatever you want this treaty to contain, you can find it in this document probably, right? But there's no coherence in the text. And in that sense, it becomes a little bit of choose your own adventure document where you can go and you can start and you can open it. I want this. And then that leads you to I want this and I want this. Basically, keeping all the options on the table and then keep adding options, adding new scenarios, adding new adventures. And I don't think that really brings us closer to a clean text that we hope will be adopted by the end of this year at the INC5 in Busan late in 2024.
Now, the last message I got from Nairobi was that people were actually quite optimistic, even up until the last hours. But then the mood switched and something happened. I wasn't there. Could you explain what happened there?
Yeah, I can do that. And there were basically two main questions that people were debating in Nairobi. One was this text, like the zero draft. And I felt that was becoming a bit of a monstrous and unworkable document. But then there was still hope that the committee would be able to agree on a so-called program of intersessional work, so that they would agree after Nairobi that they would basically continue deliberations, particularly on some technical issues, to get greater clarity. When you're talking about, you know, you want to prohibit or phase out certain high-risk plastic product categories, for instance, which product categories are we talking about? What is already existing at a national level? Which product categories have already been phased out? That kind of technical work, that there was hope that actually the committee would agree to such a program of work to continue to elaborate this more technical discussion. And there was real hope, I think, that would happen this time. They tried already in Paris to agree on a program of intersessional work. That failed. But I think many people felt this time we're just much better prepared and this time it's going to happen. Until the very last day, when this was sort of discussed and they needed to agree on a mandate for intersessional work. What exactly are they going to discuss and what exactly are they going to consider? And there became very intense negotiations. It became clear in the afternoon of the last day on Sunday that there was no consensus. Again, there were still objections on the text that they've been working on. Then it moved into some smaller groups. But then in the end, it became clear that there was an agreement and there was no way that they could get that agreement in Nairobi. And as a result, the committee failed to adopt a program of intersessional work. The only thing that they agreed on was to sort of have this monstrous revised draft text that they would, you know, ask the secretary to sort of format and compile into one document. And then to meet again in Ottawa, in Canada. But between that, nothing. And I think that was very disappointing to a lot of people. When it came to this program for intersessional work, there were only a few countries that really objected to it. It was made quite clear that Russia, they would not agree on a program for intersessional work, and Saudi Arabia. And of course, Russia and Saudi Arabia were also those that were maybe most forceful in advocating for consensus decision-making at the INC2 in Paris. It was a small minority of countries that had objected to this, while the vast majority really wanted to adopt a program of intersessional work. There was money for it, there was an interest in it, but they weren't able to decide because they hadn't agreed on the decision-making rule. And as a result, the default became consensus. And again, that just shows the risks of not having a majority voting option in the rules of procedure, that decisions aren't able to be made. Had they had that option, one country could have called for a vote on this. That would have gotten majority support, because we know that the vast majority of countries wanted this decision to be made. They could have called for that. But even more importantly, if Russia and Saudi Arabia knew that it was possible that this would go to a vote, they would have given up, because they knew they were in minority. But because they could assume that they had a right to veto anything, they could just sit there and, you know, keep their hand on the brake until the very end. So I think, again, it comes back to bite, in a sense, the constant fudging around this issue of decision making. And it makes me quite worried about the future of this process.
So just to clarify, intersessionals is a term I don't think everybody knows. So as far as I understood it, it's formalized meetings that bring forward a negotiation process between these highly publicized meetings that we hear about in the media. Is that correct?
Indeed, that's correct, yeah. It means literally just intersessional, means like between sessions. So meetings organized between sessions, yeah.
So why in the world would Saudi Arabia and Russia not agree with this work going on, given that they are part of this negotiation process?
Yeah, I think there's a couple of reasons, and I just want to make clear that I'm speculating a bit. I have tried to reach out to representatives of Russia and Saudi Arabia, but they have not been willing to speak to me about, you know, their motivations for doing what they do in this process. But I think from one perspective, very broad perspective, I think that Russia and Saudi Arabia, it's becoming increasingly clear, to me at least, that they are not involved in these negotiations in order to develop and adopt a treaty on plastic pollution. They are involved in these negotiations in order to delay and derail the process. They want, and they're aiming for this process to fail, because they have concluded that a treaty on plastic pollution is not in their interest, and they're just there to create problems. That, I think, is very clear. So for them to delay by preventing intercessional work, which would push the work forward, that I think they see this is in our interest. So that's very, very clear, or at least that's what I think. Speculating, they wouldn't admit to this, but from what I've seen of their behavior so far in this process, it seems to me that they are negotiating in what we call bad faith, meaning that, you know, they're not negotiating in order to produce an outcome. They are negotiating in order to prevent the adoption of an outcome from these negotiations. Again, they would never admit to this, but that's, I think, it's the only possible conclusion to draw based on what they have shown in the negotiations so far. Now, more concretely, there's been proposal for concrete provisions in this treaty to prohibit or phase out so-called chemicals of concerns, chemicals used in the production of certain plastics, right? Or to have provisions to prohibit or phase out certain plastic products or certain plastic polymers, for instance. And this was proposed as an item, topic for intersessional work, that in the run-up to the next INC session in Canada, that I would go and look into, okay, what kind of criteria might we used for which products and which chemicals and which polymers to include in this treaty and sort of submit under this treaty for regulation, right? Or which kind of, concretely, which products are we talking about? Plastic straws, or is it, you know, plastic bags and single-use plastics? What are we talking about? And then, you know, what exists already at a national level? There were these proposals, and there was this proposal to have more technical work on this. Now, of course, some countries, including Russia and Saudi Arabia, they don't want any provisions on that regulates upstream activities in this treaty. They don't want to see any provisions prohibiting or phasing out certain chemicals or polymers or product categories, right? So for them, it becomes a concession if they were to agree to continue discussions, even technical discussions, on these issues in the intersessional period. So in addition to that sort of overall motivation to basically just delay and derail the process, they had a very specific motivation to prevent the adoption of this kind of technical work, because it would basically push the work to elaborate these phase-out provisions or these prohibitions further, right? And it would make those proposals more credible if they had some technical work done on them in the intersessional period. So I think those were the two main motivations. But again, I have not spoken to them about this, and they have not said why. So this is basically just speculation from my side.
Well, I mean, it's obvious that there are some actors who are delaying and derailing the process. We are 3 meetings in, and we only have 2 more meetings coming up. 2024 is going to be the crucial year if the United Nations want to meet their ambitious target of having a treaty negotiated by the end of the year. The next meeting is in Canada in the spring, and then we've got the last one in winter in Korea. What, from your perspective, could be the possible outcomes? What's the range?
So, despite all the challenges that we've seen in this process so far, I remain quite optimistic. And I think it's possible that we will get not only a good outcome, but a great outcome from these treaty negotiations. I think that will require a lot of sort of leadership and courage from those countries that really want to get an effective treaty on plastic pollution coming out of this process. And I really hope, and that's really my hope, that they will show that kind of leadership and show that kind of courage when they meet again, now first in Canada and then again in Busan, South Korea. And I think concretely, you know, we see that there is actually a majority of countries that would like this treaty to contain very specific and very binding and, you know, universally applicable rules on certain key aspects when it comes to regulating the causes of plastic pollution. There seemed to be a majority support for the regulation of chemicals of concern, of polymers of concern. There also seemed to be majority support for the regulation and prohibition and phase out of certain problematic or avoidable plastic product or product categories. There's also seemed to be large support for universally applicable design requirements, right, when it comes to the design issues. So I think that's very encouraging, you know, that actually there is majority support here. And it's possible for these countries to come together and build that coalition, make that coalition even bigger, and basically force this treaty through. Now, what needs to happen at a procedural level for this to become reality is that countries need to really stop thinking that this treaty will be adopted by consensus, that the countries like Russia and Saudi Arabia will agree to this. I don't think that they will. I don't think that they ever will. And that's why these countries that are really serious and that really want to do this, they need to move ahead, even if it means losing their participation in the process. And there is a procedural path for that. It is possible for the committee now to come together and agree to adopt the rules procedure, to agree that they will make decisions as a last resort when all other options have been exhausted, to adopt decisions by a two-thirds majority vote and to adopt this treaty by a two-thirds majority vote. That option needs to be there. And then if that is so, I see just really great support for a lot of really strong measures in this treaty. So if they can only find that procedural path and sort of show the leadership required to sort of carve out that path, I think absolutely it's possible to get a good outcome of this treaty negotiations by the end of INC5. And hopefully then that treaty can be concluded there and then presented for signature at a diplomatic conference, which is hopefully still will take place in 2025. So I remain optimistic. And I think as well that if we're able to do this, if we're able to overcome all these obstacles, to sort of infuse clarity into the mess of the revised draft text and get clarity into the mess around the rules procedure and actually cut through that and move forward, that could set also a really powerful precedent for sort of multilateral environmental diplomacy more generally. If states, the majority of states, a credible majority of states, can come together and adopt global rules to prevent plastic pollution, they can also do the similar things on climate change, on biological diversity, and indeed also other issues of environmental and global concern. So we have a shot at getting this. I think it's possible. And since I'm an optimist, I think it will happen. And I think that will set then a really powerful precedent for the future. So yeah, that's my sort of bit of a pep talk. And I really hope and will, of course, for myself, also do my best to try to help realize that ambition.
Thank you so much, Magnus, for your insights and your optimism and your time. I'm looking forward to your next blog posts. People can find them on Medium. Points of Order is the title of your blog. And yeah, we'll follow it. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
That was Plastisphere, the podcast on plastics, people, and the planet. My name is Anja Krieger. The last two meetings of the negotiations are scheduled for April and November 2024. Magnus will be there and we'll give him a call to keep you updated. So subscribe to the podcast if you haven't. In the meantime, check out my Plastics 3D playlist on plastisphere.earth and listen to my in-depth feature stories in the podcast archive. There you can explore everything from the discovery of plastic pollution 50 years ago to what the science has found out so far. You can also submit a message for the Plastics 3D shorts. The instructions are on the website. Last but not least, this is an independent series and it comes with a couple of costs. So if you feel this is valuable to you, I do appreciate your help. Go to plastisphere.earth/support to buy me a coffee. You can also support me by writing a review or telling your friends about the show. I'm also looking for someone to help me correct the transcripts in return for insights on podcasting or a shout out here in the credits. If you're up for that, get in touch. Thanks so much for listening. Have a great day and see you soon.